A day-long meeting of Pacific Islands Forum leaders has ended with disagreement over action against climate change. The leaders of the 18 member countries and territories met for 12 hours in Tuvalu yesterday, with a communique and separate statement on climate change finally released after midnight. Australia's reservations meant the final communique did not endorse a statement from smaller island nations earlier in the week that referred to rapidly phasing out the use of coal and acknowledging a climate change crisis. The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, has described the outcome as sensible and says it's not for Australia to echo what the smaller island states say. Tuvalu's Prime Minister, Anele Sopoanga, has described the outcome as being as good as he could have hoped for in the circumstances, though he concedes there were some robust discussions.
We were exchanging, in fact, flairy language in not swearing, but of course, you know, expressing the concerns of leaders. And I was very happy with the exchange. It was frank. Prime Minister Morrison, of course, stated his positions, and I stated my positions and other leaders. We need to save these people. The Prime Minister of Tonga actually cried in the retreat. Did you know that?
No, I don't think we did know that. Tuvalu's Prime Minister, Anele Sopoanga. Well, Pat Conroy is the Shadow Minister for International Development and the Pacific, and I welcome him now. Good morning.
Morning, Geraldine. How are you?
Good. The Prime Minister has stressed he has one overriding duty to look after Australia's economy, and he says it's not up to us to echo what smaller island states necessarily say. Isn't that a fair enough position to take?
Well, the impact, the effect of Mr. Morrison's position has been to undermine our standing in the Pacific by setting Australia against the other 17 nations in the Pacific Islands Forum. He's undermined the Pacific Step Up, which is his signature diplomatic approach, and that obviously weakens our position in a critical region. So that's against our national interest.
But it is a balancing act, isn't it, these forums, and that's what is becoming increasingly obvious. So he does have domestic political considerations to consider?
There are domestic political and economic considerations, but there was a way through. The small Pacific Islands essentially, and all Pacific Islands, in fact, have had four main demands of Australia. One is to lift our climate emission reduction ambition, because at the moment it's inconsistent with Paris. Secondly, put in place policies to actually reduce our emissions, because they're increasing at the moment. Thirdly, don't use dodgy accounting tricks like the Kyoto carryover units to achieve that emissions reduction target. And fourthly, commit to phasing out coal-fired power and no new coal mines. If Mr. Morrison had committed to the first three, which are in Australia's national interest, he could have negotiated directly to avoid point four. But he disagreed on all four points, which meant that Australia is standing out from the rest of the Pacific.
Yes, the minister who holds your portfolio, Alex Hawke, was in Tuvalu this week, and he said signing a communique that mentioned phasing out coal was a red line issue for Australia. Now, in a sense, Labor's drawn into this too, because coal is a red line issue. It's vitally important for our economy, particularly in your electorate of Shortland in Newcastle, which is at the heart of the Hunter coal region.
It is at the heart of the Hunter coal region, but the most important point is that we are legally responsible for emissions that are released within Australia. That's the UN accounting method for climate change policies. And we could have got through these negotiations and reached a compromise that would have been acceptable if we'd committed to emissions reduction targets that were consistent with the Paris Treaty. There is a way through this process, and this government has welched on it, and that was the way through, lifting our ambition, not using dodgy accounting methods.
Without actually mentioning the coal, you're saying?
Absolutely, because in the end, we would have actually had the credibility and standing to go to our Pacific neighbours and say, I know you're very focused on no new coal mines, but the actual UN FCCC process as the architecture say nations are responsible for the emissions that are released in their own country. And by the way, we're lifting our ambition. We're lifting it to minus 45% by 2030 and net zero emissions by 2050. We will achieve this. These are our policies to do it. And that would have given us the credibility and standing to say to our Pacific neighbours, we will provide international momentum by doing that, and that's the way you look at phasing out fossil fuels over time.
Right, and because you weren't in the room, so we don't know whether they did try that, and it didn't work. Like the Prime Minister of Tuvalu says, he sounded as if he wanted more than that, meant lowering its emissions as well as not opening any new coal mines, which puts him at odds, does it not, with Labor's policies as well as the government's?
Well, I can assure you that the Australian government definitely did not do that. This government has tried to remove any reference to climate change in every communique in diplomatic arenas. This is a government that is sticking by a woefully inadequate target of minus 26%. They don't even have the policies to achieve that.
As but I they said, wanted a reference to climate change reality, didn't they? Not crisis. They didn't want to dodge it altogether.
Yeah, and again, that is a way of avoiding the issue. We do face a climate crisis. By talking about climate reality, they are trying to mute the language, mute the emphasis, despite the fact that we signed up to the Bow Declaration at last year's PIF that said that climate change is the number one existential threat to the entire Pacific. So Australia's position has been inconsistent, but we're seen as a bad actor in this area, and the only way through would have been to agree to a internationally responsible target and actually have policies that are designed to achieve that.
Now, I just wanted to also mention again what I did earlier in the program, that Winston Peters from New Zealand did actually accuse the Pacific Island leaders of some hypocrisy, because he said, well, are they behaving as harshly towards China and asking them about their emissions and how they feel about and their attitude to climate change? So did you have some sympathy with him?
Well, I had sympathy with his broader point, which is that countries are responsible for the emissions that are released in their internal economy, in their domestic economy. And that was essentially the point he was making regarding China and Australia. And I think that is absolutely right. But I understand the frustration from our Pacific neighbours and the need to push on all these angles. And we are playing into that frustration by being seen as bad actors and not actually taking concrete action on climate change domestically, which is the one thing that we are both morally and legally responsible for. And it's quite frankly the one thing that's under the control of this government.
Now, on to some other matters. Labor's election campaign and policies are currently being reviewed by former Premier Jay Weatherill and former Federal Minister Craig Emerson. And that review is likely to be completed by October. Given the drubbing in Queensland, do you think it's politically possible for the party to take the kinds of positions in a way the Pacific nations want to see? I mean, a certain degree of being hemmed in, isn't there?
Well, I think Australians, including Queenslanders, want strong action on climate change. And if you look at the swings towards us in other seats, I think that was reflected in. I think Australians want action on climate change. What played out in Queensland and to a lesser extent in my region is that somehow they thought that the Labor Party was ashamed of the coal industry, that we thought that they were akin to, that they weren't doing legitimate jobs. And I'm always very careful to say that I respect the fact that the wealth of regions like mine is built on coal. I respect the sacrifices and the risks the coal miners make every day, and I welcome and applaud those jobs. And then I go on to say that, unfortunately, the global market for thermal coal peaked in 2012. It's declined every year since. Our exports have increased in that period as people switch off less efficient coal for Australian coal. But at some stage, there will be a structural decline in the coal industry. So we need to be honest with workers and industry about what is occurring in the decades to come. But we've got to acknowledge the sacrifice they've made and the huge contribution they've made to the economy now. And we didn't get that balance right, unfortunately.
Mm. The rise of China is one of the backdrops to the Prime Minister's so-called Pacific Step Up, as you know. What's your judgment? Do you see China, that, and after all the cheap loans, that was the whole point about Winston Peters, that the Pacific leaders were asking for cheap loans from China and weren't asking about their coal-fired economy. Should we see China as a direct competitor for influence in the Pacific, or do you think that's the wrong way to look at the situation?
Well, I think China as a very significant global power is naturally looking at where it can increase its influence. That is an understandable motive from China. But they are, to some extent, filling a vacuum that's caused by Australia pulling back from the Pacific from 2013 onwards. And this government has recognised that through the Pacific step-up. So China is filling a vacuum that we've created, and they'll continue to fill that vacuum as long as we take action to stop meaningful progress on climate change. And I think that is the key point there. And the other parts of the Pacific step-up are really important, but some of them are failing or not going as fast as they need to, like the Pacific Labor Scheme. And while that continues and while the climate changing path continues, nations like China will become more and more attractive as the partner of choice for the Pacific.
Even though we did turn up with with 500 million, I think, we were offering.
Well, first off, that 500 million wasn't new money. It was existing aid redirected. And secondly, it doesn't matter how many solar panels you put on people's roofs if the nation's going to be underwater. And that's the existential threat that these nations face. Tuvalu, for example, the highest point of land is 1.5 metres above sea level. They need action on climate change now. $500 million of redirected funding doesn't cut it, and the language that was used in response was extraordinarily direct from diplomats.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Not a problem. Have a great morning.
Pat Conroy is the Shadow Minister for International Development and the Pacific.